ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
Katie Barnes, as part of your ongoing coverage of Penn swimmer Leah Thomas, the transgender woman who is competing at the highest levels of college swimming, you are in Atlanta right now for the Women's Swimming and Diving Championships, which are happening this week. What is on the line for Leah there?
The biggest thing that's on the line is actual championships.
Katie Barnes is a feature writer for ESPN.
Leah is swimming in three individual events: the 200-yard freestyle and the 500-yard freestyle, in which she is the top seed for both events, and then the 100-yard freestyle, where she is the 10th seed. Leah Thomas will be in the pool, possibly becoming the first transgender person to be a Division I national champion. Last time we talked about Leah, she was swimming in the Ivy League championships.
Leah Thomas, a transgender athlete assigned male at birth, dominated this weekend's women's swimming Ivy League championships, winning three individual events and smashing records.
Conference championships are important, but this is the moment that everyone was looking ahead to when Leah Thomas first made headlines in December, was whether or not she would become a national champion and whether or not she would break records held by some of our favorite Olympians like Katie Ledecky and Missy Franklin.
The story, of course, is about even more than just that, right? I mean, as big as those events are, what is the larger significance of the timing of this event happening right now?
Well, we're in the middle of a broad cultural discussion and, frankly, debate about what it means to be transgender in this country. Leah Thomas, from the beginning of her swimming career in women's swimming, has been at the center of that debate. And so as legislation is pending around the country, as there are possible protests brewing in Georgia, really what's at stake is a debate around who is allowed to be a woman, who's allowed to win, the ideas of inclusion and fairness, and whether or not those are mutually exclusive.
The story of Leah Thomas is one of America's most polarizing inkblot tests. For many, they take a look at her and she's a serious threat to our sacred definitions of womanhood and fairness. And for many others, they look at her and they see something significantly more mundane. A really good college athlete who's just trying to be herself. So today, as Leah Thomas swims in the most important races of her life, and as state houses across the country pay very close attention, Katie Barnes reports from the NCAA Women's Swimming and Diving Championships, where a lot more than a national championship is at stake. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, March 17th. This is ESPN Daily. Katie, we last talked to you about Leah at length right before the Ivy League Swimming Championships, which at that time was the biggest event Leah had competed in. But now, obviously, the NCAA Championships is this whole other thing. And so before we get farther and deeper into that, can you just refresh our memory with a summary of Leah's story? Like, who is she? How did we get here? How are we in the middle of what is this extraordinarily impassioned debate?
Leah Thomas began swimming in the women's category in the fall of 2021. Previously, she spent three seasons on Penn's men's swimming team. And in the process of those first 3 years of her college career, came to the realization that she's trans, began hormone therapy in May of 2019, came out to her family, to her teammates. Leah started swimming in the beginning of the fall season in 2021. And then about 6 meets in, it's December, she's in Akron at the Zippy Invitational. It's the last meet before finals. And she posts the nation's best times in the 200 and the 500 freestyles. And those times are still the nation's best times. And people really start to turn their heads and say, wait, what is going on here?
A debate that has rocked the world of college athletics. It centers around college swimmer Leah Thomas, who competed for the University of Pennsylvania's men's team before transitioning to a woman. Now she competes for the women's team and is on pace for a season that has never been seen before in college swimming.
She just sort of steps into this ongoing national debate around transgender people that had already been happening.
Does she have an unfair advantage in the pool after transitioning from male to female while in college? It's a debate that's dividing the swimming community and even her own teammates.
Even before Leah Thomas started swimming in the women's category, there had already been legislation that had passed that specifically singled out transgender girls and women wanting to compete in girls and women's sports. So there's this political debate already roiling, and she just is in the middle of it right from December onward.
You have been speaking to both sides of the aisle here, so to speak. How would you describe the clash that is happening over this issue philosophically?
Well, the first thing that I think is important is that oftentimes we talk about this being like a two sides issue. I've honestly found in my reporting that it is a many side issue. The delineations between the perspectives of those who are supportive or critical of Leah Thomas are very different. But I think it really comes down to what people believe to be true about science and sex and gender and biology and how that meshes with their held values. And so for inclusion advocates who are in favor of Leah being able to swim in the women's category of transgender girls and women, the underlying fundamental belief is that transgender girls and women are girls and women, that identity should be the driving factor for policymaking, that inclusion should drive policy. And then there are other folks, and you know, I think Nancy Hogshead McCarr, who is a Title IX advocate, you know, a champion for women's sports. She's the founder of Champion Women. She's a three-time Olympic gold medalist in swimming. Nancy has said this to me, that there are these clashing philosophies. You know, there's a philosophy that she describes as an ideology around trans women being women. And then there's the what she terms as the belief in science and biology, and that trans women are women in the context of public accommodations and employment. But when it comes to these spaces where science and biology should reign, which she would say is sports, that fundamentally those perspectives just don't mesh. That in this particular circumstance, trans women are not women.
So all that debate you just outlined here, Katie, it's all made Leah Thomas pretty much the most famous college swimmer in America right now, someone who's competing today for the ultimate prize in college swimming, a national championship. And I think it's important to establish before we get further into the whole debate here that the basic idea of Leah Thomas even competing at the NCAA championships, that almost didn't happen.
Yeah, you know, there were a lot of questions about whether or not she would be able to compete in the NCAA championships because in January, the NCAA changed its policy. Previously, it had been, if you're a transgender woman, you want to compete in the women's category, you have to suppress your testosterone for 12 months. And Leah had done that, right? She said that she started in May 2019. She started swimming in the women's category in the fall of 2021, clearly more than 12 months. The NCAA comes out and says, actually, we're just going to take the policies from the national governing bodies, which is USA Swimming.
Right.
USA Swimming says, we have a new policy. This policy basically requires transgender women who want to compete in the women's category to go before an independent panel to prove that they do not have a competitive advantage over their cisgender peers, and then also to suppress their testosterone for a total of 36 months under a level of 5 nanomoles per liter, which would have rendered Leah Thomas ineligible, because we know that Leah Thomas has said that she began testosterone suppression in May of 2019.
Right.
Which, counting the months to right now, it would be 34 months.
Mm.
And so she wouldn't have cleared that 36-month level. But also, you know, your testosterone level does not immediately go down to 5 nanomoles per liter as soon as you start suppressing it. So she would have even needed more time. So there's just no way that she would have been eligible.
And so what did the NCAA rule in response to USA Swimming's new policy?
The NCAA decided not to adopt USA Swimming's policy. And instead, for the 2022 Women's Swimming and Diving Championships this week, said that in order for a transgender woman to be eligible in the women's category, read Leah Thomas, she needed to be in compliance with the previous NCAA standard, which she was, and submit a one-time testosterone serum level under 10 nanomoles per liter. And given that she is listed on the heat sheets for this week, she has been deemed eligible. That is a settled question.
Yeah, it sounds like the NCAA settled on this decision because of the idea that it would not be fair to change the rules in the middle of a season. Like, Leah Thomas started the year competing under one policy, and presumably it would be unjust to change that policy right before the championships. But I also want to dive a little deeper here into the science, Katie, because we're talking about testosterone, and as you said before, testosterone is measured in a unit called nanomoles, but why is testosterone and the level of testosterone so significant?
When it comes to sex separation in sport, the primary reason for why it has occurred is because of testosterone, meaning that testosterone confers a tremendous amount of physiological and metabolic advantages. We know that those who are assigned male at birth and go through testosterone-driven puberty are generally speaking bigger, faster, stronger than those who are assigned female at birth and do not go through testosterone-driven puberty. And so when it comes to setting policy around how to govern the categories that we do have, meaning men's category and women's category, testosterone has become the quote-unquote bright line. It's really kind of a blurry line to separate those categories. And so when it comes to setting policy for transgender athletes and for athletes with intersex variations, the level of testosterone has been seen as a threshold that you have to meet in order to be eligible for the women's category specifically. When it comes to somebody who's a transgender man, so somebody who's assigned female at birth, who is a man and wants to compete in the men's category, there are no such restrictions. You don't have to raise your testosterone level to a certain threshold. But once you do start taking testosterone as a form of medical transition or hormone therapy, you are ineligible for the women's category.
Right.
Because that is doping in our colloquial sense of how we understand that in elite sport.
And one of the things I understand from your most recent piece on ESPN.com, Katie, is that for someone who underwent male puberty, like Leah Thomas, even if they later undergo testosterone suppression, some of those advantages don't just automatically go away. You can't just undo them retroactively. And you write about increased muscle mass and lung capacity, VO2 max, increased height, wingspan, arm length. And Leah Thomas, for example, has especially long arms compared to her competitors, which obviously provides some advantage in the pool.
Yes, there are certain anatomic advantages that testosterone suppression does not affect. And that is, I think, an evolving place of research in terms of looking at exactly how does testosterone suppression affect athletic output? What doesn't it affect? And so, for example, you know, testosterone suppression isn't going to shrink someone 6 inches. That's not something that is possible. Although it is worth noting that Leah Thomas has said that she has shrunk about an inch. So for what it's worth. But, you know, it doesn't shrink your arms. You know, there are certain advantages physiologically and anatomically that will remain. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting was the author of a study that looked at, you know, athletic outcomes, meaning sit-ups, push-ups, and a 1.5 mile run among Air Force members before transition, during transition, and shortly after transition, you know, looked at those things and found that sit-ups and push-ups for transgender women came down to the levels of output for their cisgender peers. The 1.5 mile run did decrease, not quite to the level of where cisgender women were running. But the author of that study said to me, like, yes, there are these anatomic advantages. You know, if you are tall and slender hipped with long limbs, that is an athletic advantage in certain sports. However, you know, anatomic advantage is an underlying truth of sport. And I think that's, you know, kind of the heart of the matter. Is what is an acceptable advantage versus what is not. For transgender people in sports who are transgressing these gender and sex boundaries that we have around these categories, they come with a different set of advantages and disadvantages in the various sports that they are competing in. And the question in front of us now as society is whether or not that particular mix of advantages and disadvantages is going to be acceptable, and under what circumstances are they acceptable and are they unacceptable? And that seems to be the crux of what everyone is really grappling with right now, that science is sort of seeking to answer, but we don't have great answers from science, even though we have more answers than we did 10 years ago.
But it is worth noting that we do get some answers from Leah Thomas, as well as some of her teammates, about this entire controversy after the break.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way, or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Katie, you just explained the framework for this heated and obviously complicated debate. But what we do know definitively is that the NCAA is permitting Leah Thomas to compete this week at these championships. But I am curious what more we know about Leah, the person, since we last spoke with you about her a couple months ago.
Leah, the person, and I suppose Leah, the athlete, has won three individual titles at the Ivy League Championships. She also won a relay title. It was Penn's first relay win in their program history at the Ivies. She was the top point scorer in that meet. And so, you know, she's been achieving at a high level. We also heard from her for the first time since she did an interview in December. She sat down with Sports Illustrated and shared some of, you know, how she sees herself. And it was really the first time that we had heard from Leah Thomas, the person, in some time. She's been very quiet throughout this process. She did not talk to me, for example, even though I tried to get her. But because Leah has been so quiet, we have not really had an opportunity to hear from her as both a person and an athlete about who she is, her motivations, what this season has been like for her. And so that human perspective has really been missing, even as she has been under a tremendous amount of pressure and scrutiny nationally.
And those comments that you refer to that she had in Sports Illustrated, what did she say there?
You know, she really sort of defended herself from an identity perspective. You're really underscoring the fact that, you know, she's swimming in the women's category because she's a woman. And that's who she is. You know, and also that she tries to avoid the negativity that she's seeing online, or that she knows exists online, and the hate that she has been getting. She doesn't look into that and just tries to focus on swimming. So those were sort of the things that she really underscored, and just trying to be the best swimmer that she can be.
So that's Leah's first real public comments in a long time. And in a parallel track, we've also gotten to hear from Leah's teammates. That wasn't the case when we last spoke to you on this podcast.
Yeah, that's correct. We hadn't heard from really anyone around Penn other than some anonymous comments that had made their way to the media. But, you know, for teammates to go on the record, both Andy Myers and Hadley DeBrun spoke to me and shared some of their perspective of what they had experienced, what the season had been like, and why they were coming out on the record in their particular case in support of Leah. But they really provided an insight into how challenging the season has been, not just for Leah, although of course for her, but also for the entire team. And so talking about seeing some comments make their way into the media that are about their locker room. You know, Andy talked about, you know, standing next to Leah and having her photo taken.
I mean, Katie, these are swimmers at the University of Pennsylvania, right? This is not a team that is otherwise getting covered or has ever been covered like this.
Yeah, I think for, you know, a number of these swimmers, it's been really unsettling. You know, they were relatively anonymous before any of this happened. And now they've got reporters sliding into their DMs asking for interviews. They see photos of themselves, show up tabloid style in media outlets. You know, they're constantly being asked for their opinions about something that is a very charged and emotional topic. And so that has been, I just think, really unsettling for a number of them. And it wasn't something that people were really expecting. And yet here they are, right in the middle of it, alongside their teammate.
Yeah, none of this can be comfortable, Katie. And it doesn't seem like the team itself is especially harmonious either when it comes to how everyone has been feeling about this. How would you characterize sort of the lines that have been drawn internally at Penn?
We don't have much information, to be candid, but the information that we do have is largely from a series of dueling letters, as it were. An unsigned letter that Penn Athletics shared with me that, you know, was described as being from several of Leah's teammates, you know, a statement of support from them. And then there was a letter sent to the Ivy League and NCAA by 16 of Leah Thomas's teammates, also unsigned. So we don't know who those 16 were.
In opposition to Leah.
Yes, in opposition to Leah, basically expressing that they were not comfortable with her swimming in the women's category. And then there was a letter that was signed by over 300 members of the swimming community that, you know, expressed support for Leah, or at least, you know, expressed a desire to not have the rules change in the middle of the season. That was organized by Athlete Ally and Skylar Baylor, who's a transgender man who swam at Harvard just a few years ago. And, you know, five of Leah's teammates signed that, including DeBrunn and Andy Myers. And then yesterday, a petition was released from Champion Women, which is Nancy Hogshead-McCarr's organization, and the Women's Sports Policy Working Group, of which Nancy is a member, that had over 5,000 signatures. Didn't mention Leah by name, but certainly was about transgender women and the policies governing transgender women's participation in women's sports, and definitely expressed a desire for those policies to be revisited and for the voices and desires of cisgender women and what that petition termed as fairness and safety be put over the identities of transgender women, that those perspectives be centered. And of those more than 5,000 signatures, there were a handful of Thomas's current teammates and a number of folks who are in leadership in the swimming community. We've got people who were gold medalists. There are almost 300 Olympians and Paralympians and U.S. national team members on that list. There were multiple Olympic coaches. And so there's a lot of leadership represented among those signatures as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff here, Katie, at the very least. And after the break, I want to talk about a lot of the public pushback that Leah has gotten and what you've seen already this week.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Katie, again, you are in Atlanta right now. You're reporting on the NCAA championships, which started on Wednesday, but Leah Thomas does not swim until today, till Thursday. And what sense do you have, if any, of protest, of public displays, of opposition or support to Leah's competition?
I'm expecting that there will be protests, at least outside the pool. It's unclear, at least, the scope and size of what those protests will look like. But there is certainly chatter about how there will be some sort of public display of discontent when it comes to Leah's swimming in the NCAA championships. But exactly how that's going to take shape, I think we'll find out more in the coming days.
And so what voices have we been hearing from already, even before the real protest that you expect gets started?
We've heard from a couple of people anonymously. One of Leah's teammates did an anonymous interview with News Nation talking about how she didn't think it was fair for Leah to compete in the women's category and felt failed by Penn leadership, by the NCAA, and policymakers who could have made different choices.
When we look back on this, how do you think we're going to look at this issue?
I think we're going to look at the people who were making these decisions and were in charge and kind of laugh at them. You know, you had the power to change that and you chose not to. You're kind of a coward for that.
And we also heard from the mother of a Ivy League swimmer, also anonymously, who shared her story with Women's Declaration International and their YouTube channel, and basically shared her story and her daughter's story around, you know, their difficulties and the unfairness that they saw when it came to Leah Thomas's inclusion in the women's category.
The next phone call that I had with my daughter after I learned this, I mentioned Leah and asked her if she was aware of the situation. She wasn't. She quietly said, "That's not fair." And the disappointment in her voice was clear. But she perked up and said, "I am sure they'll figure this out once everyone understands." Oh, how I wish her faith in those that have the power to make change had been well placed.
But it's also worth noting that in addition to those voices, there have also been voices of support for Leah among her competitors. So, for example, Brooke Forty, who is a Stanford swimmer and an Olympian, said that she has great respect for Leah and that, you know, she believes that treating people with respect and dignity is more important than any trophy or record will ever be. And that's a direct quote from her statement.
And Brooke Forty is a Stanford Olympian who was one of Leah Thomas's top competitors in the 500 free in this race.
Yeah, she is. She's seated fourth, actually. Recently, there was Erica Sullivan, who's a freshman at the University of Texas, but also was an Olympian in Tokyo. And, you know, she said that, you know, she really felt bad for Leah. But like, if she wouldn't be more angry if she lost to her, she'd be angry if she lost to anyone. And, you know, it's kind of this ongoing thing where everything that I have heard is that there is widespread discontent within the swimming community. And I think some of that was captured by the petition that was released by Nancy Hogshead McCarr. But it's unclear exactly who those people are and whether or not they will share more about their beliefs other than, you know, sharing in an anonymous fashion.
You know, Katie, as I'm listening to you read these anonymous quotes and refer back to that letter that Nancy Hogshead McCarr had organized with thousands of signatures on it, that petition that did not mention Leah by name, I'm curious where we are in terms of how fearful people are to criticize Leah using their name. Like, there's a lot of anonymity here, but it seems like also the mood is shifting. Where are we, do you think, on all of that?
I do think the mood is shifting. For people who are interested in talking about the broader issue of transgender women participating in women's sports. And certainly that issue in swimming is being driven by Leah Thomas. But for Thomas's critics, they have said that it's not about her. It's about transgender women participating in women's sports. And so among those who want to make that the issue, I think there is you know, sort of a thaw happening around being willing to put their name on an opinion around this issue. Although it is worth noting that among those thousands of signatures, there are almost 400 who asked to have their name redacted from that signature. So there's a little bit of both things happening. But, you know, regardless of where a person stands on the issue, it is a fact that this wide swath of signatures is the biggest that we've seen around this issue that is related to Leah Thomas in recent months. And among those signatures are a number of people with influence and clout and power in swimming. There's Donna De Verona, who is a multiple gold medal winning former swimmer, who also sits on the board of the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee. There are multiple Olympic coaches. John Neighbor is also on the board of the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee. And so, you know, there is a number of people with leadership positions and with influence in the broader sport who have come out and put their name to something like this. And that is noteworthy.
So people are speaking out more about the rules and the policies inside the sport of swimming. But what about the legislation, Katie, that is being debated in state houses all across the country as it concerns trans people in sports?
So there are a number of pieces of legislation that would affect transgender girls and women participating in girls and women's sports, particularly in girls' sports at the school level, pending across the country and moving across the country. Two pieces of legislation have been signed into law, one in South Dakota and one in Iowa. In Indiana, it is sitting on the governor's desk. And there's movement in both Arizona and also in Georgia, where Leah Thomas is swimming this week.
And how much is Leah Thomas's name being invoked specifically?
Well, on the floor of the legislature in Arizona, Matt Sharp, who is general counsel at the Alliance Defending Freedom, an organization that's been heavily involved in these bills, you know, he talked directly about Leah Thomas. And in Indiana, a mother who has two daughters who are competitive swimmers, one of whom who will be a Division I swimmer, also invoked Leah Thomas directly around why there is a need for this kind of legislation. Even though not all of that legislation actually affects college-age students, and much of it is focused on school-aged kids. And some of it affects not just transgender girls participating in girls' sports, but also transgender boys participating in boys' sports. So, for example, the Georgia bill would restrict participation for transgender girls and transgender boys, which is something that we've seen both in Alabama and Tennessee, as well as Texas, sort of doing that restriction both ways, which is interesting given that from a scientific perspective, I haven't really heard much of an argument being made from doctors and physicians and policymakers about, you know, that, you know, being even close to an appropriate discussion. And so the question is, why is that happening?
What are these rules actually doing in practice here? How are they being enforced?
So a lot of the current focus and language in these bills is on the use of an official birth certificate, quote unquote, and focusing on how a student or how a person was assigned at birth from a sex perspective, and then holding that as their sex in perpetuity. And so it doesn't matter if, you know, you have an amended birth certificate, which is a step that many trans people go through if they have access and those kinds of legal resources to be able to change their birth certificate, although there are some states that outlaw that. And so an amended birth certificate simply wouldn't matter. It's about your original birth certificate. And also, I think it's worth noting that there's some vague language in terms of exactly who do these bills and laws apply to. And so, you know, these bills will say schools or school districts. Well, that would seem to imply all the way down to kindergarten, rather than, you know, being explicit around middle schools and high schools and interscholastic competition at the collegiate level. And so we're seeing these really broad bills using the broadest language possible to really restrict the ability for transgender youth to participate in sports in accordance with their gender identity, and that is affecting all ages and also, you know, various kinds of competition. You know, we're not just talking about NCAA Division I competition or even competitive high school. We're also talking about intramural competition at the collegiate level, but also in the case of a bill like Georgia's, intramural competition at all levels. So even something that's more recreational would not be open to transgender girls or transgender boys to compete with or participate with their gender identity, and that they would be forced to participate in, you know, their sex assigned at birth. And so the actual practical application of these laws is definitely an open question, but it's looking like, at least the trend currently, you know, to have a really as broad of possible an impact on transgender youth, as opposed to being more specific and targeted as some of the previous bills have been.
Well, what those proposals are promising, Katie, as they work their way through state houses, is a simplicity of boundary, right? Like, this is a very complicated story. It involves nanomoles and testosterone and VO2 max and wingspan and all of these things. And what they're saying is just use the birth certificate. And what I'm realizing is that this is a story, more than anything, about trade-offs. And yes, there are residual physical advantages that science points to, but what you're suggesting here, what you're reporting here, is that one of the trade-offs is who gets to play sports, who gets access to sports, and that also involves kids.
I think it's important when we have these kinds of discussions to be very specific about what it is that we're talking about. And so when it comes to Leah Thomas, we're talking about policy that affects a very small number of athletes. But we also know that the policy decisions that are made by the NCAA have a downstream effect into high school association policies and, in some cases, legislation. And so looking at the existing patchwork of policies across the states that don't have laws and high school associations, a number of them utilize something that is akin to the former NCAA standard for high school athletics and sometimes lower. And so the decisions that are being made at the elite levels of sport absolutely are going to affect younger kids. It's also worth noting that we're having all of this discussion, devoting all of this energy to what amounts to being a very small number of people. But for those who are in favor of restrictions, they will point to somebody like Leah Thomas and say, well, sure, it's a small number of people, but look at what this one person has been able to achieve. And they see that as being unacceptable. And that drives much of the desire to have broad-based restrictions as a means of keeping these categories separate from the moment that we are assigned our sex at birth and not allow for the transgressions of those boundaries. And the question is whether we will find that solution to be acceptable as a society or if there's room for more nuance. And I think people are really struggling with trying to find a way to have this discussion that is fair and respectful and open, because there's all of this political controversy surrounding it that, frankly, just makes it really difficult, I think, to have a dialogue.
We'll table a larger conversation, yet another episode with you, Katie, about like how to craft a specific and nuanced and empathetic policy that addresses all of these concerns. But in the present tense, Leah Thomas is at the NCAA championships. And how do you expect Leah to perform in her events this week?
If Leah performs at the level that she is capable of performing, there's no reason to expect anything other than a high level of performance for her. She very well could podium. She could win multiple events. And I would expect nothing less, honestly.
And Leah is also, by the way, a senior, right? So this is going to be her final collegiate event of her career. Like, what are her goals in the world of swimming as you understand them?
You know, what Leah has shared publicly is that she wants to continue to swim. And she has talked about possibly trying to compete in the 2024 Olympic trials and continuing her career beyond the college level.
And beyond her just individual goals now, what do you think the legacy of Leah Thomas is going to be if, in fact, she does win the NCAA championships this week?
You know, that's a really good question. I think if Leah Thomas wins at least a championship, there are going to be some people in this country who are so happy for her and who see her as a beacon for transgender athletes and for transgender girls and women, especially at a time when those communities have felt under attack. And there will also be those who have said that her participation shouldn't happen and think that she should not be able to win a championship and who will look at her title with a bit of an asterisk. So I think her legacy is one that is going to be very complicated. It's going to be controversial, just as this season has been. And it really is, you know, sort of in the eye of the beholder. And frankly, I think most people have already made up their minds.
Katie Barnes, thank you again for your reporting on this story.
Anytime, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.